hits just keep on coming.
This is the Rich Eisen Show
with guest host Tom Pelissero.
Tom Pelissero in for Rich Eisen. Day one of three for me. Very excited to be here along with the guys in the studio. Great guests this hour. Dwight Freeney is going to join us hopefully in the next few minutes here. Lot to react to and what's
Tom,
going on in Indianapolis.
Be honest, you'd never heard of Parks Frazier before yesterday, right?
Parks Frazier, it's a great name.
It's a great name.
Yes, I got the call along with Ian Rappaport, and my response was,
who that?
Who? And he's 30 years old. He was hired as the assistant to the head coach. Not assistant head coach, assistant to
like Costanza,
the head coach.
To the traveling 2018. Secretary.
Yes. It's a Dwight Schrute thing. But I will tell you, I'll find the text yesterday, because a lot of people had the same reaction. Who is this guy? One text I got immediately from somebody who was on staff with him in Indianapolis was, Parks is an absolute stud. Hope he kills it. Still a very tough situation to be in. In other words, You're dealing with a new head coach who's not coached before. You have not called plays before. You have a quarterback who has not played particularly well and has only started a couple of games in the NFL. Good luck.
Yeah,
go out and see what happens.
We're all counting on you.
We're joined right now on the Mercedes-Benz van phones line by 7-time Pro Bowl pick, member of the NFL's All 2000s team. He's a Super Bowl champ. One of our favorites, NFL legend Dwight Freeney is with us. Dwight, thank you very much for joining the show. Where do we find you on this this fine day?
Well, I'm in West Palm Beach, Florida, trying to dodge a hurricane. Hopefully it goes down to a tropical storm, so we're going to have to deal with that. But, yeah, I've been dodging a few hurricanes. I love it down here.
Well, I'll start then by saying, if you see a hurricane coming, Dwight, feel free to hang up. This is a very important interview to us, but for you and your safety, we don't want to lose you for the next few minutes here on this show. Let me get your thoughts up in Indianapolis, franchise that you know really well. You certainly know Jim Irsay. They fire Frank Reich. They make, to the outside, an extraordinary hire in Jeff Saturday to be the interim head coach. What has been your reaction to everything that's been happening in your former NFL home?
I think it's similar to most people where, you know, you're just surprised. You're like, you know, when someone called me and told me, you know, Frank got fired, I was like, man, that's tough, because Frank's a great guy and I think he's a really good coach. I think he had just a whole bunch of bad luck and situation this year where it was out of his control. You know, you have Jonathan Taylor that goes down in injuries in the first few weeks. You know, that's, you know, your horse, right? And then your backup running back, Nyheim Hines, gets hurt with a concussion. He's gone for 3 to 4 weeks. So then, you know, you have an offensive line who's just in shambles. So your quarterback, no matter what kind of quarterback you got back there, they're going to get attacked and rushed and blitzed, and the ball's going to be coming out all different types of ways. So, you know, it was a tough situation. I think, you know, Frank managed it as well as he could based on the circumstances. So when I heard he got fired, I was like, oh, man, that's rough. You know, I wonder who they're going to, you know, promote, you know, in-house. And then I heard it was Jeff. And I said, hold on a second, who? Because I was just with Jeff, you know, at the Ring of Honor for Tarek Glenn. And we were talking a little football. We were talking about, you know, scheme things and whatever. And, you know, there wasn't even a mention of any type of inkling of wanting to be a head coach or anything, right? And I think he actually mentioned it in his press conference that he was surprised. All right? So, you know, it's going to be a real tough situation he's walking into. You know, there's a reason why you just promote somebody within the organization just to go up and, you know, salvage what you can salvage for the year. Because, you know what to do. You know how it's been working. You know the play calls and the things that you've worked on from mini camp, training camp, all of the things that have progressed to this point. You kind of know it. So you're not kind of like, you know, going in there fresh and trying to recreate the wheel. Now, I don't think that Jeff is going to do that. I think Jeff, is going to obviously, you know, he's a smart guy. He's a great guy. He's, you know, I'm happy for him, you know, because obviously he's had aspirations of wanting to be a head coach, even though it's a surprise to me. I never knew he wanted to be one. And so therefore he gets, you know, a great situation in a sense where you don't really have to interview for anything. You just go out and just do it. But that being said, if you look too bad, maybe they, people don't look at him and saying, you know, he did such a terrible job. But, you know, I guess, like he said, right, he has nothing to lose in the situation. We'll see. But I was surprised, man. I was definitely surprised.
So you go from the surprise of Frank Reich being fired to the surprise of your former teammate Jeff Saturday being plucked from a TV analyst job and a former high school coaching job to be the head coach. How quickly then does your brain turn toward, why didn't Jim Irsay call me, Dwight Freeney, to be the interim head coach?
No, I would have definitely hung up on that. I don't know, oh, something's wrong with my phone, Jim. Let me check the reception here. I don't know, man. I'll be honest with you. Obviously, there's been some type of conversation at some point. You know, I think, you know, Jeff is a great leader. You know, he had been when he was playing for us, you know, back in the day. And obviously, you know, they saw something in him to where as though this would be his opportunity to be the guy forever or for as long as they would like. Now, this isn't – the one thing I'm going to say is, look, this is a 8-week or whatever, 2-month, you know, I don't even want to call it like audition because you're walking into a middle of a season and it's kind of like it's a real – you can't really be judged too harshly on whatever happens here, you know. So that's where I think the upside is. But it's, you know, it's not a situation where they may not – they may find another head coach after 2 months, you know. They may say, hey, Jeff, thank you for just holding down the ship for 2 months. And now we're going to go through an interview process and bring some other guys in. I just don't know what's going to happen because this has never happened before. You know, I've never seen anything like this. I don't know if you guys ever seen anything like this. So it's one of those things where, you know, we all have our hands in the air. Like, all right, well, let me know what's going to happen.
What about as a player, Dwight? And I know you didn't experience a ton of coaching changes during your NFL career. But if you're in that locker room and... For one thing, I mean, you've already gone through Matt Ryan gets benched, which from all local reports was a shock to a lot of players in that locker room. The following week, the offensive coordinator gets fired. Then the head coach gets fired. And now you're bringing in someone who, listen, like people, I think, probably know loosely. A lot of guys might have heard Jeff Saturday's name, but a lot of the players in the league on that team are 21, 22 years old. They don't remember watching Jeff Saturday. They know him as a guy who showed up occasionally for the Ring of Honor celebration. If he's walking in front of you, as great of a guy, as smart of a guy as he is, what's the player's reaction when he gets up there for the first time in a team meeting this morning?
Well, you know, they'll probably be just like how we are. They're going to be completely shocked that this is happening. You know, Indianapolis has been a pretty stable place in a sense. You know, it's always been, you know, Frank, he's been there for 4 years, right? And this is, I think, you're going into his fifth year. So they were used to, you know, how he controlled the meeting and his pulse. And he was a liked guy. He wasn't, you know, there's some coaches where you just can't wait for him to get fired. You know, thank God this guy's gone, you know. Party, you know, let's have a party now. You know, that wasn't Frank. Frank was beloved. Everyone loved him. And he's just that type of guy. So you feel really bad when he's gone. And then Jeff, he's a great stand-up guy too. But I think he's also understands that. He was a player. He understands what those players are thinking. Like, what's going to happen next? You know, are you going to completely change things? And I don't think he will because that would make no sense. You don't have time to do a whole 180 on your scheme and what you're going to play call on your play calls and who's going to do this, who's going to do that. You kind of have to kind of like just manage it all, you know, and get those motivational speeches or whatever, get those guys' minds right, or maybe help with the offensive line. You know, that's the problem with the team right now, quite frankly. The defense has done everything they could possibly do based on the circumstances of all these turnovers and sudden changes in what's going on. It's the offensive line who, truth be told, has failed this team. And so maybe he's there to, I don't know, fix that. I don't know.
Well, Jeff Saturday revealed today that Jim Irsay called him during the game on Sunday, Dwight. Not after, called him during the game, saying what the H is wrong with the offensive line. And 24 hours later, Jeff Saturday, not even 24 hours later, was the head coach of the team. I think that a lot of people over the past several weeks, maybe casual NFL fans, people who are fans of other teams, have kind of been getting immersed in the Jim Irsay experience. Between his comments about Daniel Snyder, you know, potentially being removed as owner of the Commanders, to now the press conference introducing Jeff Saturday and the unique thought process that went into it. I mean, you spent a decent amount of time around Jim through the years. Like, how would you describe Jim Irsay to someone who has never met him?
Jim is something else. Jim is a great guy, first of all. All right, and he's just one of those guys. He's just going to do what he feels. Whatever he feels, whatever his gut is telling him, that's what he's going to go by. So, I mean, that's been my experience with him. You know, he's just, you know, and usually his compass, you know, is in the right place. You know, not everybody makes all the right decisions. You know, no one's perfect. Jim is not perfect. He's going to make bad decisions, bad hires, like every other owner out there. You know, but this is his ship, his team, and he's going to decide to do it the way he wants to do it. And he follows it by his gut. And he doesn't, you know, he's not going to, like, listen. You know, he may listen to people. I don't know exactly, you know, I'm not in this inner circle, so I don't know if he had any influence in making this decision. But, you know, just knowing Jim, you know, he's a guy that, you know, you have to stay on your toes. You know, just because, but he, you know, he's not going to do anything crazy, but he's just going to, you know, do things maybe a little, you know, to the left or right or whatever, however you want to look at it, that, you know, is just based on his gut.
So fanning out, Dwight, and I'm sure you still watch the league at this point. As you look around, obviously we've had a lot of close games this season. There's also been a lot of low-scoring games. There's a lot of offenses we're accustomed to seeing play well and be high-powered that are very much not, that are struggling. In your mind, when you're just watching it as one of the best players of your generation, do you see bad offense or good defense in the league right now?
You know, it's a mixture of both. I think because of so much of rule changes and, you know, from, you know, a defensive perspective, it becomes really hard. And obviously I'm a little biased on this, but, you know, the way that they protect the quarterback, it's turned into a little bit of a different game. All right, now, you know, this game has done everything for me, and I love this game. But, you know, sometimes when you, I don't know, protect the quarterback the way that they do, okay, it makes everyone else feel like they're pawns, like they don't really matter, you know, like this defensive guy who has to make a play. He's making a play not only for himself but his team. And his family, you know, he has to, you know, put food on the table, whatever his aspirations are, you know, in his career. And if he's getting penalized for doing his job, right, which when I say that, it takes people who have done or played the position of defensive line or what have you to understand how impossible some of these situations that they're getting flagged for. You know, I get it. We want to protect the quarterback position in all positions, right? But there's a level of realistic expectations, you know, that have to be looked at this, and intent has to be looked into this, and replays need to be looked in, you know, to be implemented potentially, because a lot of these roughing the passer situations are costing, you know, teams games. All right. So when you have a quarterback who can sit back there and basically drink a little martini and knows that no one's going to really hit him and he's going to go and he can go ahead and do the things that he does in the pocket, it changes the aggression and different things defensively, which equate to more points and different things there, which obviously I think that's where the league and the NFL would prefer, because fans love the 59-57 game, you know, with a million touchdowns, you know. But for me, I see that and I get nauseous and I want to throw up. It's like, where's the defense? So I do believe that, you know, the game, you know, still has some tweaking to do. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that some of these rule changes have changed certain things to where those points are being scored a lot easier from an offensive perspective. And defense is just a little bit harder to do now because you just don't know what you can do.
So last question for you along those lines, Dwight. I looked it up. The last game you played was New Year's Eve 2017. So it's been close to 5 years since you last suited up in the NFL. Let's say, you know, since strange things are happening, let's say Jim Irsay calls you up this week and says, Dwight, I know you would have hung up on me if I offered you the head coaching job, but boy, this pass rush is really struggling here. He brings you back for 8 games right now. You're suiting up. Let's say, you know, not to be 70 snaps a game, but just, you know, situationally, you're playing third downs or something. 8 games the rest of the season, Dwight. How many sacks do you have for the Colts?
How many sacks do I have? Well, based on these rules, not many.
You're getting there, but they're getting overturned is what you're saying.
Yeah, 1,000%. I'm going to get there, all right? I'm going to get there, and I might get another – I may make a few plays. You know, one of the plays is going to be called a hamstring, and another play is going to be called a groin. But within those plays, I'm going to get some sacks. And they may take them away, all right? But I'm not laying down a quarterback gently. Just don't know how to do that.
Dwight, awesome stuff. Please stay safe and please come back to the show soon.
There's no problem. You guys take care of yourself.
NFL legend Dwight Freeney, who some would argue wisely would have hung up on Jim Irsay if he was offered that that interim head coaching job. That was a fantastic answer. I'm also already thinking about which quarterbacks would have what drink while standing in the pocket. You put martinis on the lot of them. Not everybody's a martini drinker, there's definitely a few.
How many NFL quarterbacks are drinking martinis? I can't think
just
of
just a real big glass of vodka before you go out there to practice. Probably not a great plan.
What's the fastest ball sport in the world? Not baseball, not tennis. It is, in fact, the sport of Jaialei, spelled J-A-I-A-L-A-I. Originating in the Basque region of Spain and played professionally in the U.S., most notably in the 1980s, Jaialei is making an unprecedented comeback. The ball reaches speeds of 150 miles per hour. The action's intense and the danger factor is high. 6-person teams of professional athletes play the sport at the Magic City Fronton in Miami, Florida. I invite you to check out all the action Monday and Tuesday at 5 p.m. and Friday night at 7 p.m. Go to HighlightWorld.com or download the free Highlight app in the App Store. This sport, with its intensity and athleticism, is well worth watching. Check out all the action at HighlightWorld.com. Matches are played similar to tennis, with a player or team required to win 2 sets to win a match. Each set is played up to 6 points. It's a sport you need to check out. HighlightWorld.com, Monday and Tuesday at 5, Friday at 7.
Influencer. It's a word that gets tossed around a lot these days. There is a woman who went the distance, who broke ground as the first true influencer by living a remarkable life. Her name, Elizabeth Taylor. I'm Katy Perry. This is the story of the original influencer. This is Elizabeth the First. Elizabeth the First, the podcast, wherever you listen.
Tom Pelissero in for Rich Eisen, who is over in Munich, Germany, going to be calling the Buccaneers-Seahawks game on Sunday morning on NFL Network. Talking a lot of NFL today and joined by another guest, another great guest right now. He's coming off of a monster game, scored a couple of touchdowns, over 100 yards from scrimmage in a win over the Saints. Ravens running back Kenyon Drake is with us. Kenyon, a lot of football stuff I want to get into with you, but first off, I want to hit this event you've got going tonight. You and Ronnie Stanley doing a meet and greet. Say thank you to veterans who will be joining with Pups for Patriots. It's tonight, 6 to 7:30 at Wegmans in Owings Mills, Maryland. Tell me about this, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Tom. And Yeah, it's just an event kind of saluting the Patriots and the things that they, or the veterans, I would say, for what they, you know, do for us, you know, overseas and, you know, in their own way. And, you know, bringing Pucks and Patriots together, especially people that suffer from PTSD, dogs, when I have two of my own, are, you know, obviously just a joy to have in your world. And to kind of provide a service to them by, you know, bringing them together with Pups, just kind of give them the ability to kind of overcome whatever they may be, you know, going through from the things that they have experienced in their life. So, you know, it's a great event over at Wegman in Owings Mills, Maryland, and I'm excited to be a part of it with my fellow teammate, Ronnie.
That's phenomenal, man. Great on you for doing that. Let's talk about your team here. You guys have had leads in every game this season. Obviously, a couple of them got away from you early, but it seems like the Ravens are gathering some momentum here. What's allowed you guys to do that?
We had a lot of confidence in ourselves, first and foremost. The losses that we had earlier in the year just kind of prepared us for, you know, this stretch that we want to continue to be on. Obviously, we just came from a great win on Monday night. We have a bye week now, so we can kind of refresh and revamp and get people back that were injured. And, you know, we want to continue to hit the ground running. There was something that Harb said to us at the beginning of the season when we were having those fourth quarter struggles, was that, you know, every great team that goes on any type of run, you know, they kind of go through some type of adversity. And we were able to kind of overcome our adversity early in the season, and we're ready to kind of take that next step.
I don't know how much of it all you knew Lamar personally before you joined the Ravens, but, you know, watching him up close every week and also knowing, I mean, you've been in the football business for 7 years. You know that contract stuff can weigh on certain people. Lamar, it clearly does not. He does not seem to care. He's playing it out on a final deal. He may be headed for franchise tags and whatnot. What just jumps out about him to you, not just in terms of what he does on the field, but just the person that you see on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, he's a very, very unique player, obviously, but even more unique person. He is who he is. And that's what I respect about him the most, like, day in and day out, no matter the circumstances, no matter the noise going on around him, he's going to be who he is. And he continues to impress me more, you know, off the field, like you said, with, you know, the contract situation that he has going on. I was in several, I guess, really contract situations of my own from the 2019 season when I was with the Dolphins. I got traded to the Cardinals. And the following season when I was on a one-year transition tag with the Cardinals. And I can tell from my own personal experience that it was definitely pressure. I put pressure on myself, you know, and to go out there and just try to, you know, perform. You know, it just is what it is. And with him, you know, he's on a whole nother stratosphere in terms of, you know, the pressure around him to go out and succeed and lead this team. And he's just him. And, you know, I continue to be impressed by, you know, like I said, the player that he is, but even more about the man that he is, that he continues to, you know, just be him and go out and, you know, play this great brand of football that, you know, we've all come to enjoy.
Let's role play just for a second here, Kenyon. I'm going to be Lamar Jackson. You be your general manager, Eric DaCosta. All right, we're talking about this after the season. The contract talks have been on hold since back in September. All right, Eric, listen. I don't know what else you want from me here. Deshaun Watson got a fully guaranteed contract, 5 years, $230 million. I've won an MVP. I might have a second one by the time we're having this conversation. I want 5 years, $300 million, fully guaranteed, if you want to get this deal done. Otherwise, you can tag me. That's fine. I'll keep playing it out. 5 years, $300 million, fully guaranteed. What do you think?
You can have wherever you want.
If only it were that easy.
Right. If I was there, that would be what I would say. But obviously, it's a business. You know. He knows it's a business. Everybody, you know, in this organization knows it's a business. So if it was that easy, obviously it would have been done. But, you know, he's going to continue to do the things he needs to do. Everybody around him is going to continue to, you know, be a pivotal part to this team's success. And, you know, we're just excited to continue to take that next step forward as we go to the bye week and get ready for the next game.
Ravens running back Kenyon Drake is our guest. I was thinking about this earlier today. I think I interviewed you on the field for NFL Network in Miami. It had to have been maybe 2018, 2017 or 18, somewhere in there. And you've been, you know, obviously all over the place since then, from Arizona to the Raiders to now the Ravens. And yet, when you're given the opportunity in all those places, you seem to produce. Like, what I know it's hard when you're in the middle of it to kind of reflect on your career, but what's this been like, this journey of kind of being this hired gun that every fan around the country about week four goes, man, I got to pick him up in my fantasy leagues. He's doing it again.
I'm just me at the end of the day. I feel like the things that you can't control, you know, you go out there and you make the most of it. And the things that you can't control, you allow those things to kind of manifest into what you feel like you want them to be, in a sense. I don't know how to really explain that any better. I understand who I am as a person, as a man, and I understand that at the end of the day, it's a business. You know, I won't necessarily, my skill set, you know, ironically, won't necessarily fit in every single thing, you know, in terms of like every team's scheme and what they think of me and, you know, how they want me to go out and produce. But when I get on the field, you know, even since I was at Bama, you know what I mean? Like, we had so many weapons there. And whenever I touched the ball, I wanted to make an impact, even without the ball as well. And I just, you know, any type of opportunity I get, I go out there and I make the most of it in terms of just being who I am, putting my footprint, my fingerprint on the game. And I love this game. You know, I love every opportunity that I get. And, you know, I try to show that in any and every way on and off the field. And I just, you know, want to continue to do that for as long as possible.
Your situation was a little bit unusual with the Raiders in this offseason, where you had that big guarantee for this year. New regime comes in. That's not uncommon. They want their own guys. They decide to move on from you. They try to trade you. Doesn't work out. You end up getting released. When you look at what's going on in Las Vegas right now, what do you think?
You know, it's hard for me to even speak on it because obviously I'm not there. You know, I want everybody there to have as much success, you know, as they possibly can. Of course, they're going through whatever they're going through because of, you know, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I haven't put too much merit or thought into what they have going on. You know, I talk to some of the guys over there every now and then, and you know, they're worried about, you know, specifically what they can do to help the team win, obviously. And, you know, I hope that they can, you know, continue to turn around. Because, like I said, I have a lot of love for, you know, the people that are still there in that organization in general. But for me to even speak on it would be, you know, above or you know, beyond, you know, what I can control, which, like I said, is something that I've tried to continue to merit on or, you know, run my own race, in a sense.
So in terms of things you can control, you guys are a pretty good team right now. You're going into the bye. It seems like now you've had some unfortunate injuries, obviously, with Rashad Bateman being out for the season. JK has been down for a while now, but you guys are in a good spot at 6-3. When you look at the lay of the land right now in your division, in the conference, really in the entire league, where do the 2022 Baltimore Ravens stack up?
Man, it's funny. I saw a stat where it was talking about how we've had a double-digit lead in every game this season. And, of course, you know, we, you know, weren't able to hold on to three of those leads because we lost those games. And the other teams that have come before us that's had that type of success has only lost, like, one game, I think. And we lost, you know, three of those games as well. So it's like the sky's the limit for us. You know, we want to, you know, like I said, continue to get healthy. That's first and foremost, especially going into this bye week. And then taking it a game at a time. It's a season within a week in the NFL. So you can't look past any team, no matter their record. You know, it's any given Sunday. You know, I continue to just throw cliches out there. That's just what it is. I just understand that this team works hard. Understand that this team is going to, you know, lay it out on the field. Offense, defense, special teams, we're a three-facet team. And as we continue to kind of press forward, we're going to take it a day at a time, a game at a time, and, you know, try to make the most of this thing right here in 2022.
Last thing for you before I let you go, Kenyon, is it strange looking at the college football playoff rankings and you got to scroll all the way down to number 9 to see Alabama in there?
You know what? It's pretty funny because
when you look at, you know, the identity as a team and the games that they lost, they've lost, you know, two tough games on the road against top 10 opponents. You know what I mean? And sometimes that's just how the cookie crumbles. It's, you know, I would love for them to obviously be undefeated and to continue to be their dominant selves. But, I mean, you know, it's great, and it's still fun to watch them continue to compete, you know. And I'm excited to see how the season kind of continues to unfold, because you never know. Both years that we won a national championship, we lost one game. And we lost one year against Texas A&M against Johnny Manziel when he had his Heisman run. And then the next time we won was 2015, and that was my senior year. We had lost early in the season against Ole Miss. Both times we needed help, you know, to get to the SEC championship, to get to the playoffs or BCS, you know, championship back in my rookie year, my freshman year. And, you know, it all happened. But, you know, two losses are probably a little difficult to kind of overcome, especially when you lost so late in the season against LSU. But, you know, I'm excited to see how everything continues to unfold for them.
Kenny, we really appreciate the time. Best of luck with the Pups for Patriots event tonight, 6 to 7:30, Wegmans in Owings Mills, Maryland, with Kenyon Drake and Ronnie Stanley. Appreciate the time, man, and enjoy the bye. Best of luck the rest of the season.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you having me, Tom.
That is Ravens running back Kenyon Drake, who's, again, like I said, he's bounced around, keeps being on a different team every season, but when called upon, he's taking advantage of those opportunities. The Ravens right now are a really interesting team to me, because you watch them early in the season and you watch the struggles on defense, and yet when you look at them offensively right now, they remain one of the hardest teams to match up with. There's just not a lot of quarterbacks who do the things that Lamar Jackson does. Mm-hmm. And even when they're down a Mark Andrews, and they're down J.K. Dobbins, and they're down Rashad Bateman, and they just kind of they figure out, all right, who's going to line up at running back? Last year it was, let's sign Latavius Murray and Le'Veon Bell off the street. This year,
remember, they lost all their backs before the season even started.
Right, exactly. Year. They had to do it because they lost, obviously, Dobbins went down. Gus Edwards went down in that practice as well. So you're shorthanded the entire year. They make it work, and it all revolves around one guy. I mean, I don't know how thoroughly Kenyon thought through the answer on that, but I think it's the correct dynamic, which is, if you're Eric DaCosta right now, and under, listen, market dynamics are a different thing, but you are in a position where it's like, how do you not say we need to do whatever it takes to get this
yeah,
done?
Yeah, right.
You don't want to be doing the fully guaranteed contract. There's a reason that NFL teams flipped out when the Browns did it with Deshaun Watson. Obviously, he faced serious allegations of sexual misconduct, but also no one had ever done a deal like that. It upended the entire economics of the NFL. There's something called the funding rule, where if you fully guarantee a contract the following January or February, whatever it is, you got to put all that money in escrow. And if there's one thing billionaires don't like, it's having money not working for them, just sitting there doing nothing. And so we've seen other contracts get done since, the Kyler Murray deal, the Russell Wilson deal. They've not been fully guaranteed. Lamar, who serves as his own agent with help from his mom, wanted a fully guaranteed contract. The Ravens weren't willing to go there. They let him play it out. Lamar, his leverage is, I'm willing to play it out. Deshaun Watson's leverage was, we got multiple bidders. That wasn't, as one person within the league told me, that wasn't a trade. That was free agency. What Deshaun Watson had was four or five teams that are all bidding mm-hmm. for him. And the Texans were already a spot where, okay, if you want to talk to him, you got to be willing to put three first-round picks and additional picks. And all those teams stepped up and said they would. Then it was just about the money. The Browns were told they were out the very morning he agreed. Yeah. They're told you're out, and they came back and went, all right, we'll do it. We're willing to put all the money on the table right now. Your average player, even the best quarterbacks, don't have that when you're trying to do the deals early. Because you don't want to franchise tag them. It's not great for your salary cap. But you're also in a spot where you have the control. Not many guys play the whole thing out. It's a short list. Kirk Cousins did it. Got a fully guaranteed deal from the Vikings. But he had to play on two tags. If Lamar does that, we're talking about 2025. Technically, they could tag him a third time, but it's such an astronomical number, they would never do that. You wouldn't think. Although, who knows with where the cap is going and everything else. It creates a different dynamic, not to mention you're negotiating directly with the player. And don't forget, the Ravens at the trade deadline acquired Roquan Smith. another player who represents himself and is unsigned beyond the season. You have one franchise tag to use. So there is going to be a lot of incentive, if not pressure, on the Ravens to figure out a way to get one of these deals done. You would think Lamar is going to be the priority of those deals. And if I'm sitting back going, I can either commit $50-plus million a year to Lamar Jackson or $20-plus million a year to Roquan Smith, even though it's a bigger number, I know what direction I'm going. And it's to Lamar because he impacts everyone around him. That's take nothing away from Roquan Smith. But it's just, it's going to be a fascinating thing to watch play out in the couple of months after the season. January, February, March.
Yeah, Rockman. Or you could do the scenario where you get Roquan locked up, tag Lamar, see
correct.
How next year goes, and then go back to this all over again.
But Roquan wants $20 million plus per year. He wants top of the market inside linebacker money, which was a market that did not exist at that level until the Jets got C.J. Mosley from the Ravens. The only way they did that was to offer him $17 million a year, which was way beyond what anybody was making.
Right.
So then Bobby Wagner gets the bigger deal. We've seen other guys get bigger deals. So that number is at such a high scale here. Are you going to pay Roquan that money? You gave up a draft pick for him, so you would think yes. With Lamar, you're incentivized to get something done, but you also have a player who you know is going to show up on the tags. He doesn't seem to care. He doesn't look at the value of it, and part of that's not having an agent. No agent would allow Lamar to play last year in 2021 for like $3 million or whatever he was making. He would have said, we're getting the deal done, or he's not showing up.
It's funny how the Ravens always find themselves in these situations. Like C.J. Mosley and Matthew Judon, two of their best linebackers in the last few years, leaving free agency to big deals with the Jets and Patriots, and now here they are back again with Roquan Smith, having to pay this guy that they just acquired.
Well, and if you're one of the best drafting teams in the league, which the Ravens are, you can look at it as, all right, we let some of those guys walk. Because you're right. Going all the way back to like Rick Wagner and other players, they've had some of their best homegrown players.
Even Adalys Thomas, who went to the Patriots. That was one of Bill's first big splash defensive free agency signings 10, 12 years ago.
Right. They've had homegrown players who have left for big free agency deals. When you do that, number one, you're keeping cap space available. Because if you don't pay somebody $15, $20 million a year, that's money you can use to potentially make up the production elsewhere. And number two, you get comp picks. You get a third-round pick out. If you constantly are adding those additional draft assets, that gives you a lot of flexibility to be able to make other moves. Now, they're not going to want to let Roquan Smith walk, much less Lamar Jackson, but it does create urgency here. There's not a lot of teams that find themselves in those situations. The Giants potentially have it with Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley. Yep. I don't know that you look at Daniel Jones in the same category as Lamar Jackson at this point, but if you decide he's your quarterback, it still creates some pressure here because you would certainly think that they want to re-sign Saquon, who's very much the heartbeat of that team. Let's take a quick break here. We have a response from Russell Wilson to wristband gate.
I just saw these quotes. It's awesome.
I could talk wristbands all day. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Mike McCarthy going back to Green Bay as well, coaching the Cowboys against the Packers coming up this weekend. That's next on the Rich Eisen Show. Russell Wilson has now responded to the words of Pete Carroll a couple of days ago regarding along the lines of the Russell... Didn't say Russell's name, but just was complimenting Geno Smith for wearing the wristband, how that expedites some things and cleans up the play calling process, and that there have been some pushback, some resistance in the past. Here's what Russell Wilson had to say today when asked about those comments.
You don't like the, come to find out, you don't like the play sheet on the wristband?
Come to find out, what do you mean?
Well, there's, Pete Carroll said something about putting a wristband,
Calls on a wristband. I don't know exactly what he said, but I think won a lot of games there without one on the wrist. Put it, I didn't know winning or losing mattered if you wore a wristband or not. But I think that we do whatever it takes to make sure that we're rolling and moving and everything else. The few times I've definitely worn a wristband depending on the game plan and what we have called and all that stuff. But yeah.
That's fantastic.
He's smiling.
Oh my, he's so...
But you can see underneath I don't know if he really hadn't seen the comments because he kind of looks over at Patrick Smyth or whoever the PR guy was who was there. What are they talking about? But I mean, that is, listen.
The amount of shade that Pete's been throwing at Russ, though, in the last few weeks has been, you know.
I mean, it is entertaining. Who would have thought every narrative about the Russell Wilson Seahawks divorce was geared around they didn't do enough. Right. Pete's got to go. You know, they wasted some years with him. Now he's moving on. He's going to go win in Denver. And I think that there's a part of Pete Carroll that's just kind of like, I'm going to take a victory lap right now. Yeah. Even though we're halfway through the season, right? And Russell Wilson
could turn it around.
He's not been healthy. Yeah. He's not been fully, you know, in rhythm in the system. They're getting better. You've seen good stretches of Russ. I know that it's easy to reduce it to, you know, the social media videos and the high knees and the Broncos country let's ride and all those things. You have seen flashes. All right, the first half against the Raiders, he played really well. And then didn't feel great in the second half, didn't play well. They've played decently in the first halves of games. They've got to play complete games. He is healthier right now than he has been at any point this season. And so we'll find out. But for the moment, you've got Geno Smith actually running Shane Waldron's offense, which is not what they did last year. It was a lot of the Russ stuff that they had to incorporate. And, you know, for Pete to look at this and to know, and him and Russ talked a lot. They talked a lot through the offseason about what's going to happen and where Russ wanted to go and all those things. It was this very kind of odd, uncomfortable breakup. But in the end, you have his backup from last year, Geno Smith now, who is actually running what they're supposed to, playing at a really high level, and the Seahawks have gotten back to what made them so great early in Pete's tenure. They're not great on defense right now. I mean, that's the big difference. They have to get used to the offense picking up a lot of the slack.
Yeah, they're playing shootouts.
Exactly, which is not how it often was with Russell. In the Russell Wilson years, a lot of it was, all right, let's get to the fourth quarter. It's 16-13. Now, Russ, can you do it? All right. Can you go and cut it loose? Right. But that was all part of learning to play with a young quarterback and not having to turn the ball over. And as Russ got older, he wanted to open things up. He's a guy who's very conscious of his legacy, of his public image. He knows that a lot of people don't give him credit for the Super Bowl win in 2013 because, well, that was the Legion of Boom. It was the defense. And then the second one, it was, why didn't you give the ball to Marshawn? Why did you have to throw it down at the goal line? And these, you know, the crazy theories of, well, that was to make Russ the hero. No, they threw the ball on the goal line because if they ran it on second down after Marshawn had gotten stuffed on first, you've only got one timeout, and now you have to use it, and you're only getting one more play, potentially, if you run the ball three times. So you had to throw the ball at some point in that sequence. Anyway, that's a side story here. But Russ never got an MVP vote. Never felt like he got the proper respect. He wanted to go and show, I can win. I can win big someplace else, and I can do it with me. All the let Russ cook stuff, like, that was real. And Russ was frustrated when he had the turnovers in 2020, rather. And Pete started to scale things back a little bit and get back to the other style of football because Pete said it was not sustainable. Again, we're halfway through the season. A lot can change. But I totally get Pete feeling like, you know what? I took so many arrows for this guy. And I heard all of it. And I couldn't say things. And I tried to make it work. He wanted out. And that was one of the first things the Seahawks said. They put out a statement after the trade.
Yeah.
Making clear Russ wanted a change. This is not on us. And Pete's letting people know. Just a little bit here and there. It's not real direct. Meanwhile, one other story we haven't gotten to. Mike McCarthy going back, speaking of reunions, to Green Bay. Here's what he had this. Oh, we don't have enough time for sound. We'll get to it tomorrow. Mike McCarthy, though, very emotional about his return. And it makes sense. You know, I did the interview with him during his year away when he was doing the McCarthy Project and kind of re-engrossing himself in film and trying to, you know, understand some things, doing a deep self-analysis. When I asked him about his children and his family and what it would mean to go back, I don't even think I invoked his family or his children. It was just, why do you want to do this? And he became very emotional then, too, talking about his family and what it would mean to them. I mean, it was an uncomfortable situation. He was let go minutes after a loss in Green Bay. And just never got that kind of, you know, the goodbye moment. He had met his wife there. His kids were born there. They had a lot of questions. They were still in school. He lived in Green Bay after after he got let go. So to go back there, and he's the one on top, even though everybody in the world seemed to think before the season he was going to be on the hot seat, they're the ones winning. It's a fascinating dynamic. Thank you very much for tuning into the Rich Eisen Show today. We're going to be back. I'm going to be back. Tom Pelissero.
It could be information to change your life forever. Or the Something You Should Know podcast could just be something interesting.
Ramit Sethi, talking about being rich.
The old definition of rich had a lot to do with how much money you accumulated, but it wasn't about how to spend it. It was more about how to get it. But okay, so once you get it, what do you do with it?
In our culture, everybody tells you how to save, but nobody teaches you how to spend it.
Something You Should Know, wherever you listen.